Why was Satan thrown into hell? Well, the standard story is that when God created the angels, he told them to bow to none but himself. Then he created man, whom he regarded as a higher form than the angels, and he asked the angels then to serve man. And Satan would not bow to man. Now, this is interpreted in the Christian tradition, as I recall from my boyhood instruction, as being the egotism of Satan. He would not bow to man. Mm-hmm. But in this view, he could not bow to man because of his love for God. He could bow only to God. And then God says, "Get out of my sight." Now, the worst of the pains of hell, insofar as hell has been described, is the absence of the beloved, which is God. So how does Iblis sustain the situation in hell? By the memory of the echo of God's voice when God said, "Go to hell." And I think that's a great sign of love, do you see?
Well, it's certainly true in life that the greatest hell one can know is to be separated from the one you love.
Yeah.
That's why I've liked the Persian myth for so long. Satan as God's lover.
Yeah. And he has separated from God, and that's the real pain of Satan.
You once took the saying of Jesus, "Love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you, so that you may be sons of your Father who's in heaven. For he makes the sun to rise on the evil and the good and sends rain on the just and the unjust." You once took that to be the highest, the noblest, the boldest of the Christian teachings. Do you still feel that way?
Well, I think the main teaching of Christianity is love your enemies.
Hard to do.
I know. Well, that's it. I mean, when Peter drew his sword and cut off the servant's ear there in the Gethsemane affair, and Jesus says, "Put up your sword, Peter, and put the ear back on," Peter has been drawing his sword ever since. And one can speak about Petrine or Christianity in that sense. And I would say the main doctrine of Christianity is the doctrine of agape, of a true love for him who is your enemy.
How does one love one's enemy without condoning what the enemy does, accepting his aggression?
Well, I'll tell you how to do that. Do not pluck the mote from your enemy's eye, but pluck the beam from your own, do you know? Now, I have a friend whom I met by chance, a young Buddhist monk from Tibet. You know, in 1959, the communists crashed down and bombed the palace of the Dalai Lama, bombarded Lhasa, and people murdered and all that kind of thing. And the escape, he escaped at the time of the Dalai Lama. And those monasteries, I mean, there were monasteries with 5,000 monks, 6,000 monks, all wiped out, tortured, and everything else. I haven't heard one word of incrimination of the Chinese from that young man. There is absolutely no condemnation of the Chinese here. And you hear this from the Dalai Lama himself. Mm. You will not hear a word of condemnation. This recognition of the way of life through which that vitality of the spirit is moving in its own way. I mean, these men are sufferers of terrific violence, and there's no animosity. I learned religion from that.
Do most of the stories of mythology from whatever culture say that suffering is intrinsically a part of life and that there's no way around it?
I think I'd be willing to say that they do. I can't think of anything now that says if you're going to live, you won't suffer. It'll tell you how to understand and bear and interpret suffering. That it will do. And when the Buddha says there is escape from suffering, the escape from sorrow is nirvana. Nirvana is a psychological position where you are untouched by desire and fear.
But is that realistic? Does that happen?
Yes, certainly.
And your life becomes what?
Harmonious, well-centered, and affirmative of life.
Even with suffering?
Exactly. There's a passage in Paul's epistle to the Philippians, isn't there? Be as Christ, for Christ did not think godhood something to be hung on to be clung to, but let go and came down and took life in the form of a servant even unto death. Let's say, come in and accept the suffering and affirm it.